Next, he was playing a part from an ancient play, someone who was going to have his heart cut out for a debt to a vengeful woman. Or the Baron whose powerful friends had turned against him and all assassinated him. Ellie Mort was quieter, but as the ale flowed from a small keg in the bed of the wagon, she brightened. Doc was completely fascinated with the small group of strolling players, plying them with questions about their repertoire. Capistrano struck a pose in front of the fire, the light flickering off his rotund cheeks.
I play all leading gentlemen, merry or sad, or wealthy or poor. Those who have lent money at scurrilous interest, or have returned after a grievous shipwreck to claim their inheritance. Sadly, we have lost several members of our poor company, and are much reduced in what we can perform. I still do my very best to bring culture to frontier pest holes. I essay most of Shakespeare's heroes, Macbeth and Richard II and III, Henry IV in both parts as well as V and VI, and Hamlet, the saddest prince of all.
Or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing, end them.
Wonderfully spoken, Dr. Tanner. And you are versed in the classics. Oh, so rare.
Doc's done some acting. In fact, all of us have done some from time to time. JB was quickest, glancing over at Ryan, then looking into the fire. Doc shook his head modestly, but didn't argue. Ryan had remembered that the old man had sometimes spoken about appearing with amateur companies in his youth. Michael was slower.
Acting, Ryan?
At Nil Vanity. You said you'd been on the stage there, remember? Ryan tried to catch his eye to warn him not to argue.
I didn't... You have me mixed up with someone else, Ryan.
That's odd. I was sure it was you. Ryan shook his head, pleasantly puzzled. Inwardly, he was furious that the teenager's stupidity had jeopardized his scheme for getting into Yuma without any awkward questions. Belatedly, Michael realized the subtext of what was going on and clapped his hand to his head.
Oh, I get it. I said that I've always wanted to do some acting, but I never had the chance.
Sure. That must have been it. Capistrano and the woman exchanged glances.
As I was saying, our little company is unfortunately depleted. It would assist us enormously if Michael and the worthy Dr. Tanner might join us. Just for a few performances, nothing too difficult or demanding. If there were to be any profits, then it might be possible for a small share to come your way.
Ryan nodded and accepted. So far, so good. Ryan was awakened by the feeling of movement close by and the blackness of the deep forest night. The fire had died down to a cupful of gray ash. He could just make out a patch of star-spangled sky through the branches of the spruces above him. But the light of the moon didn't penetrate down to the snow-dusted earth. His hand was around the butt of the Sig Sauer P226 before he even realized he was fully awake. Ryan's night vision was excellent, and he could see the dim shape of someone crouching between him and the large rear wheels of the actor's wagon. Ellie?
Yeah. I hope I didn't make you jump. I couldn't sleep.
Ryan sat up, still holding his gun. He had survived to reach his late 30s by rarely being careless. Just because a frail-looking woman came to you in the night, it didn't mean she wasn't holding a needle-thin dagger to thrust between your ribs. The cemeteries of Deathlands were filled with men, and a few women, who'd grievously underestimated their own vulnerability. Ellie had shuffled a little closer to him.
Can I come under your blanket, Ryan?
Why? Now she was almost close enough to touch. In the stillness, Ryan could catch the scent of her body, see the pale blur of her face, and the tumbled whiteness of her hair.
Couldn't sleep. Capistrano snores like a hog in muck.
Where's Knuckles?
Under the wag. Always sleeps there. Seems happy enough.
What is it, Ryan?
Nothing, JB. Nothing. Go back to sleep again.
Sure thing.
Can I, Ryan?
Ellie wasn't unattractive, but Ryan had never been a man on the alert for the offer of an easy lay.
I don't think so.
You got a wife?
Sort of.
She wouldn't know if you had some fun with me, Ryan.
I'd know.
Nobody else.
What about Capistrano?
What about him?
Her hand had reached the top of his thigh, and Ryan could feel the unrestrainable beginnings of arousal. No.
Capistrano and I have an understanding. We've known each other for years, maybe too many years. He drinks some. Not that he's interested in making the beast with two backs. Can't raise much more than a smile these days, Ryan.
The answer is still no.
You want to get into Yuma pretending to be a part of our troop, Ryan.
Despite her frail appearance, Ellie Mort had layers of steel. Ryan saw no point in lying to her. She obviously knew anyway. Yeah.
Why?
Her hand was back on his leg, and he allowed it to remain for a while.
There's a murdered child. The men who did it could be in Yuma. That's all there is to it, Ellie.
I see. You want to, don't you, Ryan? We both know it. I can tell you're responding to me.
Wanting something doesn't make it right, Ellie. We both know that, too.
Yeah.
If you tell me that you'll ask Capistrano to turn us away if I don't fuck you, then I'll have to fuck you, Ellie. Is that what you want?
She leaned over and kissed him on the lips, the tip of her tongue probing between his teeth. Ryan tasted her excitement, and something else. Something was not quite right. For a moment he couldn't recognize it. A touch of... what was it? Decay. Ellie Mort was seriously ill. He wondered about the dreadful rat scar that adorned the cheek of Knuckles. Ellie was moving, straightening to stand above him. His eye had adjusted to the filtered moonlight, and he could see that she was smiling.
All right, Ryan. I won't rock the boat for you. Tomorrow we'll be in Yuma, all of us.
That's good. Thanks.
Bastard.
Despite his objections, Dean had been ordered to sleep in the same bedroom as Christy and Mildred. He'd argued so bitterly that eventually his father had taken him to one side, kneeling and putting his mouth close to the boy's ear.
Could tell you that I need a man to watch over the two women, but you're not a stoop. The truth is, I want you all to stay together, watch over one another, all three of you. You understand me?
The boy had nodded. Mildred and Christy had agreed that they'd stay together with the boy as much as possible, even if it meant offending the Baron. Ryan's last words had been to warn them what to do if the 10 days were up and he hadn't returned with the prisoners.
I don't think that Nelson's the sort of man who would break his word. Won't jump the gun until the 10 days are up. But that doesn't mean you don't need to be triple red careful.
The first evening, they'd asked to have food served to them in their room. Rick Coburn escorted the serving woman who pushed the squeaking trolley carrying the supper, taking the lids off the dishes with all the panache of a traveling magician.
Leek soup with cress, trout poached in chicken juices, a sort of messy thing with peas and sweet potatoes. Some meat. What kind's that, pork or is it mutton?
Pork, with applesauce.
Right. And there's some okra and some carrots. Baron's not that interested in pudding stuff, but that's a cherry and pear pie with some cream and ale or apple juice to drink.
It's good. Thanks.
You're welcome, Christy. After you're finished, I'll collect Dean and show him a wolf one of our patrols caught and brought in.
Why's that?
Not mine to ask. I'm just the guy who does what he's told. Baron says to jump, I say how high. That's me.
Just don't play the dumbass with us, Coburn. Why does Nelson want the boy away from us?
So's he can speak to you two in private, that's why.
What's he want to say, Coburn?
Christy glanced around to see that Dean was already devouring the fish and sweet potatoes, paying no attention to anyone else.
Told you. I wasn't raised to ask stoop questions of 7-foot-tall barons. Ask him yourself after the meal.
The sec boss kept his promise, collecting Dean after the boy had finished his third serving of pie.
Real big wolf, son. Got a bullet in the foreleg, but it's still damned lively. Ripped the belly out of one of the horses when the patrol tried to get it netted.
Coburn?
Coburn's eyes were glittering slits of midnight jet, his mouth a steel trap.
Listen, I've told you. Far as he goes, you can trust Baron Alfred Nelson. And you can trust me all the way to the wire. You don't believe that, well...
He shrugged and left the room with his arm around the skinny boy. The serving woman came scuttling in to clear away the dirty plates and dishes, resisting the efforts of Mildred and Christy to get her talking.
I was told to keep my mouth shut.
She vanished the moment her chores were finished. Less than 5 minutes later, Christy and Mildred had a visitor.
Come in, Baron. Doors in this ville keep us in, won't keep you out.
The gigantic man seemed even bigger, ducking under the vaulted ceiling. He held a dark green bottle, its top wrapped in golden foil, and 3 tall, narrow glasses in cut crystal. In his enormous hands, they looked like something from a doll's house.
Can I offer you something from my cellars? something quite wonderful.
What is it?
This. You will never have tasted anything like this before.
It's a 1982 Moët & Chandon.